Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えないよ。
あ、こんなところ。
What's good, Internet? It is July 21st, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. It is the end of the week.
Yeah.
It is hot. It is bug hot out there. I'm just going to say that. I know it's not a Japanese phrase, but I'm going to say it's bug hot.
How about bug squish hot?
Don't ever say that.
It's more disgusting because it's that disgusting out right now.
Or is it so hot the bugs have been squished?
They combust.
Oh my God. I watched a video this week of a Japanese hornet.
Oh, yes.
Being killed.
Oh, no.
By the swarm of bees?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they didn't kill it by stinging it. They kill it by... Yeah. It's unbelievable.
They cook it.
So, there are bees. I just wanted to explain this video. Rob Zachney, Patrick Klepek, also on the call. I have to explain this
But hang on. There's an important precursor to this. Have you seen the video that precedes the video you saw?
No. What's the setup
okay,
that
so
for
the,
me?
The Japanese hornet preys on honeybees.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And European honeybees, in areas where they've been cultivated, sometimes like Japanese hornets will like find them and just fuck them up.
Okay.
And so like in that same documentary, there is... a really gruesome and awful, like, massacre of the innocents type situation.
Oh, wow.
Featuring those wasps, those hornets, and
your
honeybees.
It's like a bunch of them, right? Like a bunch of them show up and just fuck them up?
Yeah, it's like Apache helicopter gunships being, like, unleashed on, like, a herd of sheep.
Wow.
Basically. Like, it's bad and grotesque and goes on forever.
Wow.
But Japanese honeybees have a defense.
And their defense is... incredible. So,
yes.
So Japanese honeybees. Okay, so the video that I saw, I'm just going to walk you through the video
which is
before the hornets can arrive in their attack formation, they need to find the honeybee hive. And to do that, they send out scouts, and the scouts mark the hive with the pheromones, right? They like put a little marker down. They're like, yo, it's over here. Let's group up.
They paint the target.
All right, Patrick, you go left, I go right. We'll flank them. That's what we do. And... instead, what they ended up
doing... The Japanese honeybees leave a jeep parked in the middle of the hive.
They leave it facing east. That doesn't work anymore, by the way. So what they did was they were like, okay, just pretend like nothing's happening. Don't freak out. Let the hornet get in a little bit. And then like let him come into the hive itself. Or I think the scouts are female. And then they swarm like around the hornet. All at once. Like, they cover it completely up and then start... Actually, well, no, what they actually do is they start buzzing first to make a certain hum to communicate the plan.
It's time to go.
It's time to go. Let them come in and then we'll get them. And then they come in and the bees swarm around and then...
They start vibrating
yeah. to produce heat. Now, the...
Massive
that's
heat.
Massive, like bug hot heat. That's why
yes.
it's called bug hot.
Yes, bug hot.
Here's the fact you need to know. Japanese honeybees can survive up to 118 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oof.
Japanese hornets can survive up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit.
It's actually very close.
And they can produce heat up to, or they what they do is they produce 117.
Yeah.
If they were one like degree higher, they would cook themselves. But they keep it in this exact middle zone. They like active reload right in the middle. Like they boom, they fucking nailed it. It's incredible. I can't believe that they're able to like manage it that perfectly. All it would take is like a few more bees vibrating too fast or whatever.
Yeah.
And they would cook themselves.
The chorus line is dead.
But instead, they cook. There's a thermal video of this out there that shows the bees cooking this fucking hornet. And that means that the pheromones never get back. They never gets to call them in.
They survive. They survive by cooking their enemies with their own body.
It just shows you what you can do when the whole team. Squads up. You know, when everybody teams up.
That's right.
And you share the
heat.
When you work together.
You can cook your enemies.
Speaking of enemies, I really think there's only one conversation I want to have.
Oh, no.
Rob Zachney, does my Twitter lie, or is is our long national nightmare over? Is subterfuge, is your subterfuge game with the various friends of the site, quote unquote,
various friends of site slash frenemies of site,
frenemies, is it over? Have you come out the other side? And if so, are you or are you not victorious?
I don't know if anyone really came out the other side. It's like World War I, where everyone's like, oh, thank God that is over. We'll never have to do that again. And you're definitely going to have to do that again, and it's going to be worse.
Man.
I was not victorious. I had a few misfortunes befall me over the course of this game. One is that there was the suspicious gift.
Right.
Which I learned something about.
My
but
favorite
we'll get to
chapter
that.
Of Harry Potter.
Yeah. The Gift of Subs. So we'll get to that in a minute.
That's, yeah. Well, that's a fanfic, I think,
okay.
Actually.
Yes, that is a Harry Potter fanfic. No question.
But also, then there was friend of the site, Nick Capizoli's, basically like kamikazing my game. Like he.
Oh, I didn't know this. Did this happen? When did this happen?
Oh, yeah. So we talked about this a little bit on Monday.
Okay.
So. Nick was in an alliance against me, but nobody, like, joined his war.
Okay.
Actually, it was an alliance against him, so he was, like, ready to go. And then he got, like, crunched by another player, Good Nick, we've been calling him.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
funny.
You got a good
we'll
Nick and a bad Nick.
Yeah, in-game he goes by Nixed.
Right.
And then he was also crushed by a Mr. Price. So Capo, as we'll start calling him from here on forward, basically gathered all his forces and fled into my territory and could not be rooted out. Like, he took all his specialists, which give you various defensive bonuses, you know, area of effect powers to, like, whittle down your enemy. And he basically set up camp on my border. And just because of the way subterfuge works, kind of couldn't root him out. Like, he had such a massive defender's advantage that, like, there was no way even an attack with, like, 2-3, 3-1 odds would take him out. Like, he was just there.
Oh, wow.
And if I moved off the border, he would come and attack.
Right.
So I was stuck with him. So that was basically the ball game for me. He came down and, like, shut down my expansion in the one direction that, like, I really was able to expand. And then it was just, like, this thing I had to cordon off and keep under control the rest of the game. And, all right.
Uh-huh. What's up?
It's easy to hate Capo in this situation.
Sure is.
It's real easy. And a lot of people in Subterfuge do hate Capo. Like, it's kind of like his thing is that people, like, combine against him in Subterfuge because nobody trusts him.
Right.
And he always...
That sounds like him.
Yeah. And he always... wants to go down as hard as he can. Like, he wants to take you down with him. And so, like...
It's a very wrestling-ish mm-hmm. thing
yeah,
to want.
Totally.
Yes, I understand.
So, this entire game, we've been talking about Capo and saying he's bad, Nick. And he is. Like Capo is no fucking good. like... For Capo, like, it's way more important that he drag other players down than succeed because, like... At least if he pulls you into the slime with him, he's still relevant in the game to somebody. Like, he'll be remembered.
Wow. Brutal.
The mistake I made, and it's a mistake a lot of people made over the course of this game, is thinking that the existence of a bad Nick implies a good Nick.
There is no good bad Nick binary. There can be two bad Nicks.
Yes.
It's a flaw in our thinking. Like, we have this need to find, like, binaries and balance and equivalence in systems that are, like, fundamentally evil.
Right.
And
never
so
trust
we, like,
a Nick. That's what
that's
I'm
right.
hearing.
Right.
We look at a game like Subterfuge and are like, well, if this one Nick is, like, nakedly evil, then that surely this other Nick, who's always ready with some advice or, like, a timely warning, surely this person is the good Nick.
And a timely warning arrived?
No.
Okay.
Oh.
No, because as much as we want to believe that, like, there's someone in our corner in Subterfuge, that, like, you're not alone with the monsters, the thing about good Nick is that, like, we never ask why he chooses to spend so much time, like, among the monsters or... why he knows so much about them. Like, we don't, like, I never asked why all the other players, like, kind of hate him most of all.
Well, he's won every time, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Why would anyone
trust him? He's won 4 times or something.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really good at this, and it's because he presents himself as kind of your guide, your ally. And most of what he says, like, what he says is, like, true and totally useful. And it's only at the end that you realize, like, that Nyx was never your guide. He was your jailer. And so, like, I had spent days setting up this way to eliminate Capo and get him off my border and get back in the game. And my ally in this was Nyxed, and after like I spent about 36 hours getting ready for the final push to deal with him, Nyxed is like, he just moves all his fleets, they're gone,
and I'm like, shut down communications at that point. Does he just like, where does he say sorry?
Oh yeah, he says, yeah, I got a sorry. He's like, I have to go rush mines. He had to go like take his fleet and turn it into mines and generate the magic element
so that he could win.
Allows him to win the game. Yeah. So he's like, he goes off to ascend, basically, and he's like, sorry. And so later, this is where it gets really fucked up. Nyxed still wants to think he's good Nick.
He's not.
Like, later, he's like, boy, this endgame's going to be really good. I was like, fuck you. Like, my game is over. And so he's like, he starts, like, apologizing. And, like, he's not sure why I'm angry. So he starts, like, apologizing for his various sins. And I swear to God, over the course of an evening, my phone kept buzzing because a new confession was coming in every 10 or 15 minutes.
I just love the repentful tyrant. That's really great.
Yeah. Well, I need to know something. Have Nick and Nyxed ever been photographed together at the same place in the same time?
I am not 100% sure.
Okay.
That
I've got a theory.
Like, yeah, I think
I can't follow it, Danielle. I can't seem to put it together.
I've got a theory here.
Yeah, I definitely have the suspicion that, like, it was two phones side by side.
He's got his chaotic evil and his lawful evil.
You know, what's amazing is one of the things that Nick uses on the internet is Nick is Nyxed.
There you go.
The answer is right there. Nick is Nyxed.
Nick is Nyxed. Oh, my God.
It's right there. Just fucking follow the money.
I feel like Charlie from It's Always Sunny. Like, he followed it, and it was only one step. He didn't need to make a lot of connections. It's beautiful.
So he keeps apologizing for all the shit he did over the course of the game, including the fucking gift subs.
Oh
no.
Yeah, no. Him? I read that situation correctly. Those players fucked up. There was a mistake.
Oh, interesting.
And Nyxed is like, you know how you can salvage this mistake?
Oh no.
Is you can turn those subs into gifts.
Ah.
And that will bring peace between your two factions.
Uh-huh.
And you won't lose those subs.
Warm tongue motherfucker.
Yeah. And so like it was like the end of Usual Suspects,
right,
where I realize, oh, everything since like day 2 or day 3 has actually been orchestrated.
Right.
And like, I admire it, like, well played. But the amazing thing is how many, like, now I sort of see it. Like, Capo and I were sort of talking toward the end, and he's, and Capo was like, oh yeah, like, Nyxed always does this. Nyxed always, like, gets the new players on side and turns them against all the other players because he presents himself as trustworthy. And then they just do his bidding. And so even toward the end, you had people, like, in the chat congratulating themselves for, like, taking part in his betrayals. And I'm like, it's nice that you believe you had agency, but, like, we were all but pawns in this. Like, the finishing order was dictated by Nyxed, and it was really impressive. But it was also very, very dark, and I cannot wait to play again.
Oh, man.
So I saw a thing on Twitter towards the end that, like, Capizzoli ended up just being literally unable to make any moves at all. How, yeah. Like, did you just box him in completely and surround him, or did the game break? Like, what?
No, I boxed him in. Oh, wait, no, the game did break.
Okay.
There was some sort of glitch that he was unable to send out fleets. Boy, that glitch could have shown up earlier, let me tell you.
I think the lesson here is just how close a friend and fraud really are. You know, like, that's...
Yeah.
You know, the words start out the same.
Yeah. There's really an I and a U.
Yeah.
Different.
And I, like, as in an IOU.
Right.
There's things going on there. Language.
You should not play as your boss, Rob, I'm just going to say, I mean, this is not a, I'm not, I can't give you this directive. Your private time is your own time. Really, as your friend, not your fraud.
Your friend, not your fraud.
You should give your mental health the priority in your life so that you don't drive yourself to death via subterfuge. I need you, Rob.
Yeah, we need you, man.
Austin, Danielle, there's things I can't leave behind.
I see.
Oh.
I
know.
We all there's, have. Yeah. I got some things I need to do.
All right.
In subterfuge. I got to go back below the waves.
All right. I'm, things right. I'm giving you your diving helmet, but this is the last time, Zachney.
I always come back.
God.
It's true, you know.
While you've been underwater, I've been in outer space.
Ooh.
I actually guess that's not... Where does Destiny take place?
Yeah, Earth, it's in space.
Earth is in space.
Space-ish.
It's, yeah, space-esque. Destiny 2 has a beta running right now on consoles. The PC one is in August, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. That game is Destiny, but kind of better, I guess? What do you? What's everybody, who's been playing the Destiny 2 beta?
Well, you and I played it together. Rob, yeah, well, we have not really heard kind of your thoughts. This runs over a lot of repeated content that both you and Austin saw during the reveal back in, was it May, I think that was?
Yeah.
But like, how have your thoughts changed? What do you think of the beta based on what you played so far?
That beta was the same thing that I played. At the thing, like
it was
exactly
the same exact thing,
except there was like one more multiplayer mode, I think, and maybe there was a little bit more to the mission.
The story mission has like a beginning and an end that it did not have, which
correct.
Is nice.
Yeah, which was nice. It was cool to like see a few more NPCs in the story mission that we didn't see in the the thing. It's I would say
I don't think you need to play it because I mean that was sort of the thrust of the article I wrote this week, which is that I had every confidence the campaign missions would be more like this. I had, you know, every confidence that, like, the strikes could get more ambitious. Like, those are things that...
Yes.
I'm not saying they're easy. I'm just saying they were expected for a sequel that had very clear weaknesses, and those weaknesses are often a strength of Bungie as a studio, and so I was pretty confident in their ability to pull that off. But the beta itself is extremely safe in terms of what it communicates about what is quote-unquote better about the game.
So that's especially... In contrast to the first beta, which, like, that context, I think, is for the Destiny 1 beta, rather.
Well, there was an alpha and a beta for Destiny, remember.
Right,
so there was
you're right.
Yeah. And so I think for most people, they played the beta, which was, like, a large section of the Cosmodrome, like, set on Earth, which you got to experience a patrol. And I think a lot of people thought, like, oh, this is just a tiny slice of the video game. And then, as it turns out, it was one-fifth of what was in the entire content.
Yeah.
Of Destiny, and the beta for Destiny 2 includes no patrols. Like, there is no section that you're
there's
just
no open
wandering.
World exploration.
Yeah.
Right. So for people who don't know, it's like the opening mission or an opening mission to the game, and then a strike, which is one of the kind of group like mid-level I guess experiences. It's not as rigorous and as difficult as a raid.
Okay.
You don't have to like get together everybody like, okay, it's raid night. But it is sort of like, all right, everybody button up and play well, because there are areas where if you die, like your death is there's consequences.
Well, and exactly. they're really not meant to be played solo, although you can play them solo. Like there are things the game lets you do that, but it's designed to be played with a group. There's lots of areas and strikes in which you cannot revive yourself and respawn.
Right.
So, and those are often, you know, the more challenging combat encounters. But
and
yeah,
then
like the
there's multiplayer modes in this too. That's the third thing is you can play competitive multiplayer. And the strike is good. That's like for me the big takeaway
it's
is
a very good
like,
strike.
Wow, good strike.
Good strike.
And I've played that strike. This is the third time I've played it. And I've liked it each time. And obviously there's been gaps between the first two times I played it, which was at that event, and then yesterday or on Monday. But even still, I knew all the steps that were coming. But I had that thing that I think Destiny produces, which is I was excited to show them to you. I was excited for you, Patrick, to see the final boss fight where you're falling through all that stuff, or like
God,
the huge
cool.
Saw excavation area, like all of those things. Like, oh, I'm cool. Like, I'm excited for Patrick to see what comes next. And I still had like the hairs on my arm stand up when like it was a close fight. You know, like, oh man, like just barely pulled that out. Oh, we can do it. And like. There were enough cool mechanics in that strike for it to be fun as a repeatable thing. Obviously, I still hope that there are a lot of strikes in that final game. I hope that there's a lot of great single-player content. I hope I'm not rerunning the same things over and over and over again. even though I know I will be to some degree. And so that's why it's like it's a weird thing for me. My thoughts haven't changed at all, but neither have any of my questions been answered.
Well, right? And so it makes me, you know, one thing I didn't propose in the article, but it was something I thought about more as I looked at sort of the content that was in the Destiny 1 Alpha and Beta. And what happened with the Destiny 1 Alpha and Beta was that it created this intense whiplash because people really liked what they saw in the Alpha and Beta and were willing to forgive the lack of content or the context in which that content was sort of rolled out to players because, oh, it's an alpha, it's a beta, it's a demo, you let a lot of things slide. And so the thing that people took away from it was like, holy shit, like the combat is really good in this game. Like they not only took what was great about Halo, but have adapted it into this like wild new way with classes and like just all of that was very clear in the beta and alpha and got people very excited to take that and do it in the full game. Mm-hmm. And especially in the like pre Taken King, you know, year and a half or year before that dropped, the whiplash when Destiny 1 came out was intense because it like the story was garbage. Like there's no way to redeem. Like you can talk about the Grimoire cards all you want, but like the story in Destiny 1 was a complete fucking train wreck, and the missions themselves were just like they were insulting to the legacy of like the single player campaign stuff that Bungie had done in the past. Like there was
none of the dynamism, none of the spectacle, none of like the flow. It was lots of I'm going to bring my little AI buddy and stand next to a computer for 40 seconds.
When I got to the end, attacked. I was physically angry at how bad the end of that game was. Like
it basically ends in a parking garage with a rando showing up and being like, "That sure was a game."
That does happen. Hey, she gives you a gun, okay? She gives you her gun that you've out-leveled by the time she gives it to you.
I thought it was some sort of elaborate joke, like, oh, there's some other thing that's going to happen. Like, oh, this is not how this game ends. And it was just like, oh, my. That's why I didn't go back to the game until Taken King, because I was so insulted by the way that game ended that as much as the combat intrigued me and as much as I would hear from my friends, like, oh, there are these bits that are, like, worth grasping onto and, like, ignore all the other stuff. I just couldn't do it. And yeah. Even when I came back for the Taken King, the things that it made better, like patrols weren't really fixed. Like the daily grind of that game, like still hadn't been fundamentally addressed in a way that I wanted it to. And so what I guess to wrap around to so what I was building to is that if the whiplash for the Destiny 1 early access stuff was like, we're going to overwhelm you and then be underwhelmed with what delivers in Destiny 1. The hope is, what I'm grasping onto, is that with Destiny 2, the thought was, let's do the opposite, right? Like, let's show the obvious things that people know are going to be better in this sequel and then overwhelm them with the other stuff when they discover it in Destiny 2. And like I've heard like some little birdies since expressing that concern that there's reason to be interested and optimistic about what is going to be there in, and not just in patrols, like patrols is like a larger term for sort of like the wide open spaces in which you're discovering side missions, things you're doing that are not the campaign missions, that are not the strikes, that are not the raids. There's reason to be like theoretically excited for a lot of the stuff that's building. This is like not based on people who have played the game, but based on sort of the kinds of people that maybe are working on that.
Right.
Like
people who have experienced that is.
Yeah. The way it was conveyed to me was like, ooh, like that could be really fascinating.
Okay. I'm very curious because that's for me is like the bulk of my time in Destiny was always bumming around either in social spaces waiting to go do strikes or like I'll just run some patrols tonight. Like I'll put on a podcast. I'll hop on Skype with a friend and I'll just go do some patrols or like I'll go do activities that I can repeat and
right. Like some quests that I have to fill out that because of some patrol quests that I could go do. But like in no world was anyone sitting down and going like, can't wait to go do some patrols. Like it was an incredibly weak element of the game despite how central it was to act as a buffer between a lot of the main stuff you were doing in that game. And it will be inexcusable for the sequel to have any, like, it's a low bar for them to do better patrols, but, like, it's not that they have to beat what they did in Destiny 1. Like, they need to exceed it and make that a meaningful part of the game. Otherwise, that's going to be really frustrating if they don't pull that off.
Yeah. Weird thing is there's going to be 1 hour at the end of this weekend during which one of the social spaces is open in that game.
Oh,
for the beta. They're doing the farm, which is like one of the social spaces. Just for an
hour. What is the social space in this game? So, I'm a Destiny noob. I've played it twice and didn't remember it. So.
It's so in the first – in Destiny 1, there are a handful of them by the end of the – by the end of the run of all the expansions and all that. They're places that you go to like check your mail and upgrade your guns or – like go like turn in quests
it's
and get cutscenes. It's where people dance.
Okay, cool. Now I
it's where people dance. They throw like
a
glowy ball around. You
kind
of just like hang out there, go into your vault, you know.
Yeah.
Do stuff.
Do what you would do in life
like a
if
town
you were a cool
in,
space person.
If I was a cool space person,
right.
All right. Or like in a town in an MMO, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's where all the vendors are. It's cool. Like they are weirdly I think people have a real sense of what's the word I'm looking for? It's not just appreciation,
affection?
But there is an affection for those places in the first Destiny because people have spent so much time there. So like I get like, oh yeah, at the end of the beta, just fucking go hang out because there are no patrols, there isn't a space to do that in this. So like you're either playing competitive, which is the thing I'm probably never going to do much of, and like that's not hangout time, that's like be on your fucking game time, or run the strike, which is still like, okay, this is pretty serious. There's just no place to just like hang around with your buds and like, oh, cool armor, you know, like that just isn't a part of the experience in the beta right now. Rob, I'm really curious for you because you also played this stuff when I did a couple months ago. Has your headspace changed at all on this game or what you want from it?
A few different directions.
Okay.
So the mission in the beta actually left me feeling more optimistic because like, the thing that was demoed was so stripped down that it really lacked some key context and felt way more lifeless than the story mission feels in this beta. One key thing is that there's this moment where you go running into the courtyard outside the tower, and Zavala's there. And he's fighting the Red Legion troops who are coming in. And in the original demos, it's really underwhelming because, like, Zavala, like, has all the, like, liveliness of, like, a Chuck E. Cheese animatronic. Like, he, like, pops out from behind a rock and, like, does a shoot animation. And then, like, literally, like, every, like, 3 minutes, he's like, take cover. And then he, like, pops his shield and you have to go hide in there while missiles come in. And, like, with just you, a bunch of Cabal and Zavala, it felt like, oh man, like this is a really shittily constructed encounter.
Right.
This is bad. In the beta, like you come barreling out of the same tunnel, but this time like a bunch of other guardians are with you. They're other players. And so like you go charging into this melee and there's a lot more Cabal and suddenly it feels a lot more like, oh cool, like this is what the last defense of the tower should feel like. Right. This is what I always wanted Destiny to feel like.
Yep, totally. Even just that sequence with all those NPCs just like coughing and hanging out, like there's just people. They're just people.
Yeah.
They're humans. They're not even guardians. They're just like people who are hanging out, who are like very clearly distressed, who need help. Like I don't know. Like I wrote a piece a few years ago now about the most recent Arkham game. For
Arkham Knight.
Right. I wrote it for Giant Bomb, in which I lamented the lack of civilians in, like, not just civilians. I lamented the lack of kind of a populated Gotham City because for me, the fantasy of Batman is not he's in a war zone. He's in a demilitarized zone. Right. He's in a place cut off from the rest of society, or people are all in their homes because it's snowy out, as was the case in Arkham Origins. Like, it's living and protecting – it's protecting a living city. It's protecting a city that, like, blossoms with life and, like, blooms with culture. Like, that's why Batman is important to Gotham City, because Gotham City is dope and, like, he wants to keep it safe. And Destiny really had that problem too, which was, like, who the fuck am I protecting? Like, I don't know anybody in the city below that the last city on Earth. Like, no, I don't – what is that? That's, like, a few lights in the distance. That's not, like, you know, Jennifer who got me coffee. That's not, you know, James who, like, runs
Jennifer
the movie theater.
James.
I just want to help Jennifer and James.
Yeah,
like,
you know.
Like, but they don't exist in that game. And so even just seeing for a moment a brief vision of them in the hall being like, yo, we're under attack. Like, that helps. Hey,
they
Jeff.
Have their coffee. They're trying to run the coffee to a safer place.
That's all. You know? I hope we see more of that. That's like part of why I'm actually curious about the social space in the beta is like, okay, it's called the farm. It's not at the last tower. It's somewhere in like the middle of nowhere.
It's Herschel's place.
It's right. Exactly. It's Herschel's place. Exactly. Like, will that be the vibe? Will it be Herschel's place? That's what I want to know. Because I would appreciate some of that vibe actually in Destiny. That would actually be kind of interesting. You know, like, we'll see.
Yeah.
So I'm holding out hope.
One thing I did not like, but it looks like they're actually patching it, is that so they made heavy weapon ammo really, really scarce. And that was doubly shitty, I thought, because also sniper rifles and shotguns are no longer the secondary weapons.
Yeah,
they're now
power weapons
only.
It sucks.
Oh, I still think that decision fucking sucks, and we'll get to that in 1 second. Yeah. But in addition to that, then they made this power ammo really, really rare, even more so in PvP. I felt like the entire thing was being rebalanced for PvP, which I'm not sure like that's your core Destiny constituency.
They've explicitly said that this was based on an older build and that the PvE balance, especially in regards to heavy ammo,
will change.
They said it changed a long time ago. Not sweat it. Like, who knows whether that's true, and maybe they're just saying that, and they're just balancing it for the final game, but they've already publicly acknowledged that they're aware of the imbalance.
Though I still think it's actually kind of shitty in PvP as well, because, like, what it has turned into is, you know that weird pressure of when you're playing a MOBA, of, like, when you got a really important, like, team ulti that's
None
ready
of us,
to go?
I don't know what that feeling is, Rob. Did you just propose that to this group?
Yeah.
I played Awesome Knots for an hour once.
Ulti. He said ulti.
Okay. Ulti.
What's an ulti?
Wait, isn't it just
It's your aunt, but she's older, so she's an ulti?
Ulti. No, for me it sounds like, you know how the people in the UK call Resident Evil Resi?
Resi 7.
Peggy 17. Ulti 17.
Okay, so you know how in Overwatch, sometimes you have really big abilities.
Yes.
That, like, aren't like your regular abilities.
Oh,
they're not
ulti?
Like on a mouse button.
Your ulti.
My ulti. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in Dota.
All right. So, you know how, but there's that pressure of like, oh man, if I did not use this in a way that everyone deems correct, everyone's going to be like, you fucking idiot, you ruined it, you wasted that power. I think a little bit of that is maybe going to start happening in PvP as well, because they've made the power ammo like scarce enough.
I see what you're saying.
And so many weapons are now dependent on it.
Where it's like, oh shit, I've got this ammo, do I spend it? Is this the moment to use the grenade launcher or the sniper rifle or the shotgun?
If you're a weaker player, as I certainly am right now because I haven't played Destiny in ages, it actually actively discourages you from using that shit and therefore getting better with it.
Right.
Because you are probably not the ideal person to grab that shit when it pops. So you're better off letting a better player use it. And so, like, it just doesn't feel fun. It feels like the game is sort of like slapping your wrist when you try to reach for like the cool shit. And then the other aspect of it is, I fucking hate the weapons in this game. Like, they're now so samey across the board. Like, it's like three flavors of rifle and a hand cannon, which is just a big, slow-firing pistol.
Hand cannon's good. Hand cannon's a god. I like the hand cannon.
It's cool, but the thing is, like, shotguns and sniper rifles are also cool, and, like,
yeah, they're good.
In
I like
a shooter, they shouldn't be, like, this rare treat where it's like, ooh, you want to use a shotgun. Oh, look at the big man.
Shotgun is the one that is the most, like, outrageous for me because of how core it was to my build in the first Destiny, but also just to my build in games.
Yeah.
Like, I play a Vanguard in Mass Effect. I fucking charge into somebody and then I shotgun them.
Yes.
I like the shotgun has been since Doom, the shotgun has been a thing that people associate with shooting in video games.
Yes.
Does it have a good shotgun? Might ask anyone upon entering a conversation about a new shooter coming out. Oh, Splatoon 2 is out. What's the shotgun like? I'll ask that question. Like, that's, I want to know what the shotgun is like in a game. Like,
here comes Destiny being like...
Destiny 2. Destiny 1, good shotguns. Pretty fucking good shotguns.
Here comes Destiny 2, like, grabbing the shotgun out of your hands and being like, better skills, better ammo, better balance, and lifting it away from you.
That's not... You're on a different level right now, Rob.
Wow.
That's...
We really need a GIF of what just happened
there.
Oh
my God.
That was good. There were gestures to go along.
Oh, Destiny 2018. These midterms are going to be rough.
Oh.
Really excited for the midterm expansion.
That never even got officially announced, did it?
No, I think that they're going to kill that. I think the Democrats are going to kill that. The response to that exact...
the Democrats.
Anyway, sorry. Mm. People should look up the... Oh, we're on our shit right now. The shotgun in the thing that the power, the switch with the power ammo here that is so frustrating for me is just, I actually thought that the way that, so in the original Destiny, for people who don't know, and like, I know we're just, again, we're deep in some weird shit right now, Danielle,
it's
but
some good Destiny.
You're our good listener, stand in here.
Do my best, yeah.
So in the original Destiny, the guns are split into three categories. There was just like regular kinetic guns. What was that called? Okay. Was it kinetic or is that the new one? That's the new one. Is it kinetic elemental power?
Yeah, I just call it like primary, secondary.
It was primary, secondary, yeah. Special or something in the power or heavy. And primary was just like, oh, they're just guns. They're just the guns that you have. Like assault rifle, hand cannon.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
What were some other like pulse rifle, like kind of like your meat and potatoes, like this is the gun that you're carrying 90% of the time or like most of the time. There was a mid-tier one where the ammo was rarer, but it was like, oh, this is like a step up, special situation. Shotguns for when you're up close, okay. Sniper rifles for when you're far away.
It's your Ferrari.
No, it's not your Ferrari. Okay. Your Ferrari is still like your rocket launcher.
It's your fancy SUV.
It's your fancy SUV.
All right, I got it.
And also you live a life where maybe you actually do, or it's like your 4x4.
Okay.
But hey, guess what? You actually use it now and then. You're not just like, it's not
yeah,
just
yeah,
the flash.
It's not just there.
Exactly. Right. And then there's the Ferrari, which
Ferrari.
Is the like, your souped up rocket launcher. Oh. Or what are like a sword by the end of it? What are some other heavies? I always forget. Oh, like heavy
machine gun.
Like all sorts of like, this is for when I got to pull out the big gun.
All right.
And that differentiation across ammo types meant that, like, I felt like I had tactical choices when I went into a room or when I went into a fight. It was like, all right, I don't want to bring out the rocket launcher yet, but I'll use some shotgun ammo on this motherfucker. Like, that felt like, okay, good. Like, I'm committing. I'm going to go all in. Or not going to go all in, but I'm going to go in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then to go to this new system, which has just kinetic, which is just like, it's a regular gun. And then elemental is like, it's a regular gun. What has fire on it? And then power, which is like, that's where all the cool shit is, including shotguns and sniper rifles, but also including rocket launchers and grenade launchers and all that.
Okay.
It's just like, it's like we went from a system that has, like, what if you could rate games on a 1-3 score or a 1-2 score? We don't have that 2 anymore. Do you know what I mean? There's no middle of the road anymore. We don't get to say this is like, I don't know.
It's just
really good.
Right.
Yeah, you always feel like you're now, this is never the right moment for this power weapon. It's this is not dire enough, which
so
I'm not sure that's how shooters should feel. And
so right, so I'll stick to my crappy gun.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the thing that this did change for me. When we left that event a couple months ago, I was like, it'll be fine. But putting this time back into it today where it's like – or this week where I was like, I do miss a shotgun. I do miss a sniper rifle. I don't want to give up a slot. I don't want it to be my power weapon. I want my power weapon to be really powerful. And also, we haven't seen yet what sort of inventory options there are in the game. A thing that is true about the original Destiny was you had very limited inventory slots on you, and then you would often keep extra stuff back at like home base in a vault where you either had to go back to home base and like go up to a terminal and be like, oh, I'm going to trade out this set of guns for this other gun because I'm going to go fight a boss. I need an elemental thing that does blah, blah, blah. Or I'd open up the app on my phone, which actually let you just automatically
move.
Right, exactly. And like, I don't want it to be that situation again. I want it to be very straightforward. Like, so it's just one of those things where I just want it to be good. I just want it to be good.
Yeah.
And there's stuff here that I think is really good. And I wish I was going from here into its eventual release with like a little bit more energy, because the stuff that looks cool, the strike, the story stuff, I'm like completely here for. And it's just weird to be in the opposite position of where I was for early Destiny 1, which was like, but there's some core things about the combat that I'm not on board with anymore. And I don't know. We'll see, Rob. We'll see, Patrick. We'll see, Danielle. We're going to make you play Destiny 2
I'm happy to play it. My mind is open. My heart is open.
Okay.
My heart is open to two things this week.
What
pro wrestling and Destiny.
Wait, your heart is open to pro wrestling.
My heart is open. I remember I wrote that piece.
Oh, right. Okay.
I wrote that piece about Game of Thrones and how I had an epiphany that Game of Thrones is pro wrestling for Prestige TV, and that now that means I should open my heart.
You should open your heart. And also the pipe bomb is really good.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Rob was telling me about this.
You can't get into wrestling talk.
I understand. I'm just saying my heart is open. That's all.
Yeah.
I've got an open heart.
People should go dig up the David Shoemaker columns about like 2010, 2011 era WWE.
Yeah.
Super fascinating because like Twitter, there's just a moment of just like WWE, which is this thing that is fake, this thing that is scripted and that plays up its script, that knows it's scripted, interacting with a fandom that is getting more knowledgeable about it as a business.
Yes.
And then how performers in that company then took the next step of engaging with the knowledge that the fans had. Well, and it isn't just the CM Punk pipe bomb. It is also like the ascendance of Daniel Bryan. It's like a bunch of different things happen at once that are just like really interesting, like Mobius strip like things turning in on themselves that pushed the product, as they call it, of the show to be really good. And we're not there anymore with pro wrestling right now, or with WWE. Pro wrestling is still safe and good and as a whole, but the WWE is not turning out great shows right now. But that brief moment is so good.
Are there any ladies only pro wrestling
There are lady divisions in the WWE that are strong.
They're
that
downplaying
have great,
the Divas branding, right?
They've given up the Divas brand. Divas is done. Okay. They retired the Diva. There used to be the Diva belt for women wrestlers that was like a butterfly that's a diva on it. And now it's the women's champion.
Okay.
And it's just like a different color of the men's championship belt. Sure. It's the same belt now. And like they brought up a bunch of women from their kind of developmental league. And some of them are just incredible performers. I think one of the best matches I've seen in the last 3 years was a women's championship thing in their developmental league. I'll send you some.
Sasha's stuff. From All Boston.
Right. Sasha is so good. Also,
Sasha from Boston.
I am going to send. Okay. I know the exact match to send you.
Yes,
that's going to make you love wrestling.
I'm interested.
Holy shit!
My heart is open.
It's for people listening. It's the Sasha Bailey NXT match before NXT. Sasha went up.
Oh, who doesn't know that match?
It's a great match. I know. It's fantastic.
Also, I don't.
Let me just tell you.
I like that you bought that maybe I knew what that match was.
The ulties in that match, unbelievable.
The ulties, yeah.
All right. Let's move on to anything else before we all just go into our own weird alcoves. Anything else happening? Anybody else playing stuff this week?
I'll briefly mention something. Yeah. I don't want to go too far into it, but I just did a little piece on this, and I thought it was worth my time. I played a game called The Awkward Steve Duology. Which is an FMV game.
Okay.
Full motion video game.
Thank you.
Yep. Sort of inspired by utter FMV trash of the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And it inspired by that. And it's a single person, a single developer. The guy filmed himself.
Oh,
basically,
Steve.
His name is Paul Franzen.
Wait.
Game developer.
I thought that was Awkward Steve.
Well, Awkward Steve is his persona, as in wrestling. There's like a persona, right?
Now I'm on board.
So his persona is Awkward Steve, and it's an FMV game about a guy who has social anxiety and is awkward and does weird, funny things.
Okay.
Like there's a party going on at his house, and he hides in the bathroom, and it's all different choices of things you could do in the bathroom, like read a book and take a shower with your clothes on and other fun things. It's just a funny, goofy comedy thing. And it's actually going to be at the Smithsonian American Art Museum arcade exhibition. It's just like a very funny and heartfelt kind of thing. And he gave a really awesome interview. So that's up on
waypoint.vice.com to read that.
Yeah, he's just a funny dude who's honest about his sort of social anxiety.
That's awesome.
And made a funny, cool thing. So.
Rad.
Yeah.
Anybody else playing stuff this week?
I continue to play Splatoon 2.
Yeah, Splatoon is out.
Wrote about
it's
it.
Good game.
What? Huh? What's to say that again, Austin? Did I misspeak?
Yeah, I said Splatoon is out.
Splatoon? Do you have to really drag it out?
Tune.
Huh?
Yeah, Splatoon.
Can you do like a little more Canadian, like the toony kind?
Sure, Splatoon.
Splatoon.
I think is do how Splatoon. You say it in French. How do you say two in French? Two in French.
De.
Splatoon.
Splatoon.
I think that's on the new Battlegrounds map.
De. Okay, Splatoon.
Splatoon.
There it is.
Patrick is now sorry he brought it up.
How's that game?
I'm sorry for all sorts of things, Rob. We don't have time to go down that rabbit hole. I really want to be honest. I go read the piece that I wrote on Monday about the game. It's if you haven't played Splatoon, like it's an excellent entryway to the series. If It's, if you had played it, like, it's not a whole lot different. It's certainly the most, like, traditional conservative sequel that Nintendo's made in a long time, but I think that is largely because, A, that's how a lot of shooter sequels operate, and B, it makes sense for them to reintroduce Splatoon to a huge audience that is on Switch, that wasn't on Wii U, and that if they're going to make, like, bigger changes that will happen in the inevitable sort of Switch or Splatoon 3 a couple of years from now. But yeah, it's really good. It's really fun. I'm digging the multiplayer in a way that I dug the first one, and I don't play these types of games. It's very accessible, but yeah, the single player is good. Yeah, it's good. It's a good game. There's, like, not a whole lot to say about Splatoon except, like, yo, it's good. And also, oh, man. So, walking around the... Maybe I should walk around the plaza, because the plaza has some good...
The plaza's a social space.
Yes, social okay, space. It all makes sense now.
Let's see if I can pull up what are people are saying.
He's pulling up.
I'm going to pull it up on my, on my Switch right now. Earlier it said anime sucks was one of the primary messages that was being paraded around the social space. I really enjoyed it. There's another one.
Did you write that?
Yeah, no, yeah, one of the primary.
Are you sure?
No. Gus right. says salty Splatoon. That's good. Uh-huh. Oh, low cap, anime sucks. He's still there. Still part of the, still really. what do you call, here's a question for the podcasters. What do you call a stupid squid?
I don't know. What do you call a stupid squid?
Ink competent.
Yeah!
Oh, I should have asked Danielle. She's like the only one.
Yeah, you probably had that in your
down
heart.
Down for that. Oh yeah.
Let Ruby Kurosana have a center. What does that mean? Hmm.
I have no.
That sounds
idea.
Like a sports thing.
Roris loves his girlfriend. I'm happy for you, Roris.
Auroris, I'm great. Oh,
Auroris. Shout
nice.
Out to Auroris.
Big, big honk, which is a very good name. Big Hong is a very good name. Release Knack 2 now.
Oh, come on. How many of these did you see?
That's my alt, actually. Big Honk is actually my After Dark account.
Yeah.
I found Phobos. I already know what it is. Terrible one.
Phobos is very good one.
Very I'm good. Gonna, go look that up on Twitter.
If you go to twitter.com/Fobwashed, Fobwashed, ED, rather, there's a really good one right now.
Happy Woomy? What does Woomy mean? I don't actually
That's so good.
Don't look that up.
Do not so Google good. Happy Woomy.
Oh, no.
Don't Spell, cry no. Don't cry for me. I'm already splat.
it's all right.
Hold on.
What are you describing for people who've never seen Splatoon?
Well, there's, like, Miiverse posts that people can have.
Yes, thank
and
you.
When you're walking around the social space, which is whatever you call it in Destiny, but it's just
I was picturing, like, a squid memorial wall.
No, they're just, like, the little Splatoon characters kind of standing around, walking around, interacting with the environment, and the little bubble comes up as their Miiverse post.
It's
hot dogs, says Retro, which makes me...
Hot dogs are big right now.
Speaking of hot dogs.
All right, let's do this.
There is a great debate unfolding on Twitter right now, begun by Great Uncle Buttpan, which if you're not familiar with Great Uncle Buttpan, it's Alex, Giant Bomb's Alex Navarro, who we played with earlier this week in Battlegrounds. Let's see.
You should look that up at youtube.com/waypointvice.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great uncle. I'm a great aunt.
Let's see.
Yeah, that's not how that works. Not all great uncles are married to great aunts. Tell me. I don't fucking know what you two are up to.
Fine. That's how it is.
I don't. Great auntie Knuckles.
Great Uncle Buttpan writes, mustard is better than mayo and ketchup. I will die for this belief.
I mean, that's factually correct. So what's the issue?
I have thoughts. It's definitely definitely better than mayo.
Ketchup is worst of the bunch.
No, wrong.
So
but does
I don't
that
know
mean
what,
does that mean you like, dislike that?
Do you put mustard on fries?
Yeah.
Look. Okay. Ketchup has one role and one role only.
Fries.
When someone fucks up French fries, then you call in ketchup. It's like a troubleshooter. It's like Mr. Wolf for bad French fries.
Mr. Wolf.
You're like, I've got a bunch of shitty French fries here.
Blood everywhere, but
that aren't good with just salt, like a good French fry should be. So I'm going to bring in this disgusting fucking tomato sludge and, like, dip this wedge of garbage in there.
Get the fuck fuck?
Are you saying like that French fries have like the consistency of a fine steak that if like cooked correctly, then you don't use any sort of condiment with it? Who are
Damn
you?
Damn straight. A good French fry? Work of art, my friend. Work of art. Just don't, don't fuck with it. Maybe like some herbs. By all means,
herbs.
Put some herbs on that.
Yeah.
You know what? If you do want to, if you do want to gild the lily, I don't recommend this.
Gild the lily.
Mayo on French fries is just fine.
I shouldn't have brought this
up. Out of your head.
I shouldn't have brought this up.
All right. How do you feel about
next? You're gonna say like, oh, actually, you're supposed to put jelly on cheeseburgers.
On pizza.
Like, oh,
yeah,
it's just
right.
Like the jelly brings
chutney,
out
sure.
Jelly brings out the je ne sais quoi.
A good onion jelly. Yeah, it's delicious. How do you feel about fry sauce, which is something I heard
sauce?
Is a delicacy in Utah?
What is fry sauce?
Mix mayo and ketchup together to make a pink sauce. Natalie is agreeing with me. She knows it's at least a thing.
I've heard
it
of it
like
before.
Sounds like she likes it.
I would try this.
She likes it.
It's similar to Russian dressing or Thousand Island. Like,
yeah,
like Thousand Island Russian dressing. I like that flavor profile quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm not here to talk about. I'm not here to talk about fry sauce. I'm here to talk about ketchup,
just,
mayo, and mustard.
Those are the two things that comprise fry sauce. So I feel like it should
be
part of
this. You're saying there's going to be an allegiance between ketchup and
are
mayo.
Are they greater than the sum of their parts and also part of this? Yeah.
Is that what goes into Russian dressing? Is that ketchup and
probably
mayonnaise? It looks like it might be. That might turn me.
It might turn you, see?
Because I love Thousand Island slash mustard or slash Russian dressing.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know now. But I don't – the thing is I don't like mayo by itself. Like I don't
right.
at all like mayo by
right.
itself. I like it when it's like with a
part
lot of herbs
something.
And like it's an
yeah.
aioli or like yeah there is some
yeah.
some mix. But I don't like mayo on my sandwiches. I don't like mayo near my salads. I don't like mayo involved in my life, generally speaking.
I understand.
Or mayo or Miracle Whip or whatever else you want to call that
– type of thing.
That
substance.
Style of
oily
condiment.
Egg white
Austin,
substance.
Why do you think that is?
Because it's bad, one. Two, because there's better things I can put on a sandwich.
Like ketchup.
Well, I'm not like on a sub, no. I'll just do oil and vinegar. Like,
oil
I don't need the egg yolk in there.
Exactly.
I don't just do
exactly.
me oil, give me the
you've
vinegar.
Never, you've never taken a turkey sandwich and just dipped it in a thing of ketchup?
In like a vat of, no, I have not. Yuck. I like ketchup.
I feel like maybe Patrick has.
I am pro ketchup.
Ketchup's damn good. On a hot dog?
Really
on a hot dog? Damn good on a hot dog.
Yeah, see?
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck these Chicago hot dog elitists that say you cannot put ketchup on a hot dog. They're
Rob
monsters.
Is leaving
Rob's
the show.
Dropped his...
He literally threw his headphones.
He's gone.
He walked
left.
Out.
I wish we were streaming.
Walked out.
He's walked away.
They just said you put ketchup on a hot dog. Sorry.
He is relaying this...
The, a door just slammed?
Someone else. He slammed a door.
I think he's back.
All right. He came. He cooled off.
Oh, man.
I don't even like relish.
You're going to make him leave again. I like mustard.
Resignation dot doc.
You're still using Word?
I paid a subscription for that shit, yo. Sometimes you gotta fill out forms.
I think the most offensive part of this whole conversation is the revelation that Rob is still actively using Word.
This is a really good conversation.
Fuck.
So wait, let's quickly, no more debate, let's go around the table. And this is an up or down vote in the chamber. Mustard is better than mayo or ketchup. Yes or no, Austin.
Mustard is better than mayo or ketchup?
And ketchup.
Together?
That's where
this
there's
the
a
dilemma.
Real there's
I,
a
I think
real
and
question
or it's
there.
Basically it's a tier. Is mustard at the top or is it not?
It's not at the top.
So no, you're a no.
What type of mustard?
Austin,
but all
this,
the mustards.
Stop it.
All the mustards you
that's
can imagine,
unfair.
Austin.
You can't do all the mustards.
Yes, you can.
No, you can't,
hey, guess what? We discovered another shitty
things.
Thing about ketchup. There's only ketchup.
No, there's so many different mustards. I can't. Cause, and there's way more bad mustards than good mustards.
True.
So you do not want to go down this route.
True.
You better pick a good ass mustard.
Oh, wait,
it's
wait,
if
wait,
you
want to
win this, you better zero in.
The best mustard, the best ketchup, the best mayo.
Oh. The best. See,
you
that,
gotta
that
go
makes
with that.
It, okay, then I'll put mustard. No, ketchup. Ketchup's more versatile. Ketchup.
Ketchup's
ketchup.
More versatile.
Ketchup's versatile.
Yep.
There's a lot of bad food
yeah.
in the world.
So we got two for ketchup.
We don't live in the world that you live in, Rob. Rob's like, oh, if the fries aren't as perfect as they could be, we could use. Guess what?
Most fries,
not that good. Most fries need a little help.
Then why are you eating them?
Because you gotta eat.
Bad fries are still good.
Yeah, because you go to the school district you're in, Rob. That's why we invest in public schools. We don't all get to go to where they have the fancy deli meats and the nice fries.
We didn't have any lunch at all in my school.
This is what I'm saying.
Are we talking about a David Brooks column now?
Maybe.
It might be.
Well, we are talking about the fries that you get, is what I'm saying.
All right, stop. So we're at two ketchups.
You get microwave fries?
We're at two ketchups. Danielle, yes or no?
You don't want my opinion because I'm a vegetarian, and I feel like that throws
Yeah, but you can still be a swing vote. You can still fuck with these.
None of these things are
You can
are
be the capo of this conversation.
But nobody respects a vegetarian's opinion about sandwiches.
We do. We're here. All right.
This is Waypoint.
I think you're faking it right now because you really want me to say a certain thing.
You say whatever you want. I want to say what you want. Oh, so wait. Are you vegan or are you vegetarian?
No, vegetarian.
So it means you can eat mayo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I wanted to make sure that you could vote on all three.
Right.
Is Danielle the Susan Collins of this debate?
Oh, my God. Well...
Can we buy you off with $100 billion in Medicare ketchup?
I just know I'm the Molly Ivins of this debate, and no matter what conclusions y'all reach, I'm on the right side of history here.
I think you are, actually. Wow. Man, this is tough. I like oil and vinegar.
Yeah, me too. That's not one of the votes.
I know.
You can't vote again. You can't do a writing.
Shit.
This is a very Susan Collins thing to do.
For myself.
Not a
true
conservative.
You're not the best condiment. No offense.
Why not?
Danielle, you and I go back.
We really do.
Oh, it's personal.
See, that's
now.
The thing. That's the other thing here. Also, Molly Ivins is cool.
If you want to split the vote, that's totally fine. We'll just be in deadlock. We'll be in gridlock just like fucking Congress. That's fine.
That's what it is.
Can't pass a goddamn thing.
You know, I take moral objections to the whole debate.
I mean, that's fine. Actually, if you want to sit out.
Sitting out.
All right, well, I guess ketchup
sitting
wins.
Sitting out this one.
Ketchup wins.
As it always does.
I had to take
As it
a
was
stand.
Said, as it was foretold, as it ever shall be.
Ketchup wins.
I'm going to eat a meal with ketchup today, even if it doesn't
require
it. Me too.
I'm going to go get some bad french fries tonight.
Hell yeah. I'm going to take some photos of them. I'm going to text them to Rob.
Take that, Rob. Oh. Eat this ketchup. Ketchup with this.
This is our subterfuge. Eat ketchup.
Let's go to the ketchup bucket. Somebody give
Yay!
Me...
See, Rob doesn't know, but that's what's in the bin in the bucket the whole time.
Every time you reach down there for a question, your hand gets all red and gooey from that tomato sludge you hate so much.
God.
Give me a number.
12.
You look so disgusted
you know
right
no,
now.
I'm not going to 12. What's the Heinz number? 57?
57.
Yeah, we're going
Fuck
to 57.
You.
We're going to 57. You're going to answer this question. That's what you're going to do.
Oh, my God.
Catch up with these hands. This question is directed at Austin.
Of course it is. This disgusting, overly sugared question.
No, it's not, actually. A few years ago, during the Steam paid mods debacle, you were on a podcast with Lana Polansky, who's a games critic, where you described yourself as, quote, a dirty Marxist. I'm curious what your relationship with Marxism is today. Would you still describe yourself as a dirty Marxist? If not, what made you change your mind? Best regards, Jeppe from Denmark. I don't know if I'm mispronouncing your name or not. I think, like, with the rise of the DSA over the last... 6 months or so, I think that Marxian analysis is as relevant.
Do you want to explain what that is to people?
Yeah, the long and short is God. What's the long and short?
Or even just the acronym. I'm not sure everyone knows what DSA means.
Oh, the Democratic Socialists of America is a third party, is an independent party in America that's been gaining steam. That has at its kind of as its base. A set of principles that value and fundamentally want to build a society that is equitable when it comes to labor, to labor rights, that people who produce value should be paid well for the value that they produce. They should not be exploited. They've gotten better over the years in their politics around identity, around marginalization. It's a pretty good party, is what I'll say. It's at least in my experience. But more importantly, like, I do think that the sorts of analyses that Marx and those who came after Marx, which is like a whole bunch of political scholars, are as relevant today as ever. Analyzing how society is grows and reflects the kind of relations, the economic relations that it is built upon, right now especially, is super relevant. It's very easy to look for. I mean, like, this, we actually can go back to the David Brooks column that we were talking about, right? Like, that column was one in which he wrote, basically, the problem with education is cultural. The problem with education is that people will build sort of cultural borders around good schools, around, you know, access to certain resources for young poor students. That the only way that you can get into the upper class, the only way that you can go from actually from like kind of, you know, working class into an established middle class is to like learn the ins and outs of the culture. And I'm not saying that there's nothing there. Right, exactly. To like the right mustard, as it were. Most of us just have ketchup. And I rejected that in this
yeah.
column I wrote last week, you can find also on Waypoint. Because
Rob just
what,
made a face.
The reason that people don't have access to good education is about funding. It's about like what districts are prioritized inside of a state, what programs are prioritized, where your tax money goes, how tax districts are actually set up to begin with, what sort of redlining is happening in terms of housing markets. All of that stuff is what leads to the kind of cultural situation that we're in, the societal situation that we're in. And there's flexibility depending on which thinkers you talk to about how those things interact with each other and blah, blah, blah. But all of that comes down to this core notion that Marx put forward that was in opposition to another idea. Like, at the time, there was this idea that ideas are what drove society. And what Marx said was, like, actually the material relations are what drive society and drive history. History is about different material things, different relationships between, you know, money and factories and people who work being put into relation with each other. It is not just like whoever has the best ideas get those ideas become the ideas of the world. In fact, it's the ideas of those who own the factories and it's the actual organization of the factories themselves. And I think that's right now, yeah, still dirty Marxist, it turns out. And if that hadn't been sprung on me, I'd have an even better answer. But I'm going to look at the second 57 question. It's double 57.
Yeah.
Hey, Vice Crew. I guess I'll start by saying I was able to vote when Obama was first elected. I didn't make the time to vote back then, but I did 4 years later. However, even then, I didn't care much about politics. Now I'm 26, and this last go around, I wanted to research everyone and everything on my ballot, especially given what was at stake. With things circling down the drain faster and faster, again, this question came in a little while ago, yeah. I feel my voice needs to be heard now more than ever. But how the heck do I find the time to do so? Even if I only focus on things that matter to me most, such as healthcare and net neutrality, the two things that have been really in the news lately, keeping up with what's going on with them in Washington, calling my representatives, et cetera, it feels like a part-time job at the very least. I already have like three of those. Yeah. Am I making this a bigger to-do than it actually is? Does anybody else call about every bill up for vote? As people who are way busier than I am, how do you keep up with the news in the political world and find the time to make your voices heard? That comes in from Daniel from Florida. How do you find the time?
It's extremely important. You prioritize it.
What's that
That's
look like?
That's my easy answer,
yeah,
right?
Like, what's that look
as
like?
As a person
in your
who has
actual,
a nice
so like,
job
for example,
and a nice
like,
life.
In Illinois, I'm lucky / unlucky to have a Republican as sort of my representative in my area. And so that gives me a, like, I think there's a lot of people that on the left that live in places in which you're represented by people on the left. And so there's often less of like a personal incentive to like get involved because like, well, my representative is more or less expressing my views like, as opposed to like me, I have a reminder on my phone. It's like every Monday at like 4 o'clock when like my day's starting to wind down, and then I find something that's been in the news that I care about, and I'd write a letter, individual letter, to my congressperson every single week because I want it to be on the record that like one of his constituents, like that will be, you know, voting against him most likely in 2018, like, is keeping tabs on his voting record every single week, and has that. I know that that has to be processed and noted in a record somewhere. Like whether or not it makes a difference, it's like it keeps me to keep on tabs with like my local politics, which is
right.
That's what I hold on to. Is like I've, you know, in the past year, like since buying a house and being in, you know, I have voted in local school board elections. Like I've tried to focus my energies on paying attention to what's local and like sending reminders to like to check that stuff out. Like I even have a reminder that's like, hey, like on Fridays, like, hey, check like the local newspaper and just like read through like the local headlines to get like a sense of what's happening in my area. So like I use reminders as ways to like jolt to, like my head to go check things that I might not just instinctually see during the day. That hopefully gives me a chance to take care of that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, is definitely the way to do it, is to set a specific goal in mind, which is like, I'm going to write one letter this week. I'm very busy, but I know I can contribute in this one way. I'm going to set the time aside to do that.
But, so, I want to hear, though, from like, because Danielle, you were an activist for years, you were at the ACLU, right. And you're also kind of a master of keeping many plates spinning simultaneously, so like, I think a lot of us are in this position of like, boy, I wish I had more time to like make my voice heard and take part in politics, but I'm really fucking tired and busy and overstretched. How do you do it? Like, what are the things you can do now to sort of like have an impact if you don't have the luxury or the ability to go become a full-time activist?
Yeah, totally. I like my whole thing, my whole shtick, my whole life has been, if you can fight, do it. And knowing that like not everybody has that mm-hmm. luxury. Some people really don't have any time whatsoever. They have 5 kids and 3 jobs yeah. and are worried that ICE is going to deport them and right. that sort of thing. That advice and my harsh tone towards make the fucking time for it does not apply. I want to make that very clear. That does not apply to people who don't have the privilege of having how literally 5 minutes.
How do you make that judgment to yourself as to whether or not you're there with the time?
Being honest with myself, I can. Okay. I can do it. Yeah. You know, I have a full-time job. I have a part-time job. I have a volunteer
gig. You know when you're making an excuse.
And I can fucking do it. Right. Exactly. Right. And I think a lot of people can. I think a lot of people can do it. And it's honestly a question of you just make things a priority and you just do it. Like Patrick was saying, having a reminder, whatever it is that helps you stay on track with something, I personally just sort of see things in the world and I will call and I will do the email and I will do the thing and I will show up to the march and I will volunteer for the thing, whatever it is. I'm on Twitter all friggin' day and that's not always the healthiest thing, but I have people kind of giving me those reminders and that's how I see it personally.
I will say the other thing that can help is to turn it or add it to your socialization, right?
Like absolutely.
Have a letter writing week or yes. weekend event. Like yes. have a fundraising campaign thing that like you work with other people and that way you're like with your friends doing this.
This is a thing
also,
you can do together.
Exactly. Do yeah. this postcard writing, you know, a weekend get together, put on a movie and just like knock it out.
Do
like
it.
Whatever the thing is that you're trying to do, figure out a way to incentivize yourself so that you are not the only one doing it or so that you're able to do something else while you're doing it. Find a way to like double up on those tasks that can help a lot.
Exactly.
Not that hanging out is a task, but it kind of can be a task.
It can be to get out of the house, right?
Yeah, totally.
And also, here's the thing about it. It feels really fucking good.
Yeah.
It feels really, really fucking good for a lot of these things are fairly low effort. Yeah, turning up for a march is higher effort than writing a letter or making a quick call. But sometimes you need that win. You need that boost in your day or you need that time that, hey, you spent it with friends or you did whatever you did. Like, it feels good to feel as if, I know it's a drop in the bucket, but at least this is contributing towards that good bucket. And think about the good bucket, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's my 2 cents.
I think
2 cents for the proletariat.
I think we did 2 cents for the – hopefully a little more. Hopefully we'll find more than 2 cents for,
drop in the bucket.
For the proletariat.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you for listening to us talk about destiny and ketchup and wrestling.
And Marxism.
Submarines and Marxism. That's welcome to Waypoint. It's our brand.
We're extremely online.
We are extremely online. We're not actually, thankfully, we're not extremely mad online. We're just extremely online.
Just extremely
I'm Austin
online.
Walker. You can find me at Austin Walker. No, that's wrong. At Austin _ Walker on Twitter. Where can people find you, Danielle?
Danielle R.I.
On Twitter, Patrick.
Find me at Patrick Klopik.
Rob Zachney.
in the mustard aisle at your local supermarket, where I'll probably be buying Ingelhofer wasabi mustard, which is really just out of this world.
You getting paid
for this?
It's
like mustard, but with wasabi.
Ooh.
You can't put that. You can't. No. You don't get to cash that. That's not part of the mustard category at that point.
Wait, you made a big deal about how.
No, it is, because remember we said the best mustard and the best ketchup?
No, because then mayo is just like a billion different things in the mayo category.
Oh, shit.
See what I mean?
You actually use the variety mustards against mustards. Like, literally, we can play the tape. 10 minutes ago, you were like, there's so many mustards out there, and a lot of them are shitty.
But
I'm saying there's good ones, too.
Of course there are good ones. Good everything.
Oh, I had an amazing guacamole / hummus yesterday, and now I can't. Like,
was that a hummus? Is that a guacamole?
Exactly. It was both. A little bit of salsa in there, too.
You can find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, at popliopals.moe, at, for instance, culturalmarxism.club.
See, there we go. That's the very appropriate one.
We have so many domains now. There was a new one recently that was very good. Does anybody remember what it was? God,
it was like biz.nas.
I mean, there is that one. The one that I really, one of the ones that I really like is, it uses biz in a really good.
Yeah, there's a really good.
What is it? It's something.biz.
Haunted.domain.
You already know what it .biz is incredibly good. Is incredibly good. Also, largest millennial video library in the .biz. Lots of videos out there.
Yeah.
BoatJazz. BoatJazz.org. Someone, I don't know, Patrick, did you hear that one?
No.
Someone got us BoatJazz.org. Shout outs to whoever did that. To all of our amazing fans.
Thank you, friends.
Remember, if you are one of our amazing fans, you can talk to other amazing fans at at discourse.zone.
Discourse.
Shout outs also to Tim Barnes. You can find on Twitter at TimBarnes451. And to Natalie Watson, who is at Natalie Watson.
There we go.
She's nodding at me.
Yeah.
Who runs all of our streams, our great intern.
A fry sauce person.
And finally to Bowen, who lets us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more info about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle.
Yeah.
What is it that we say to him?
Be good or be good at it.
Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.